This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Wednesday, February 22nd, 2017. I'm Caleb Brown. What conflicts exist between liberalism and Islam, and can they be reconciled? Mustafa Akyol is author of Islam Without Extremes, A Muslim Case for Liberty. We spoke last week. For a lot of people who consider themselves fundamentalist Christians, people who go to the text of the Bible first, and most especially the words in red, those are the words of Jesus, is, you get a pretty clear picture of how one ought to conduct themselves in the world, and it is in many ways very out of step with how people do conduct themselves, even people who are self-professed Christians. There is an idea floating around that anytime Islam has something of a reformation, that going back to the core of the faith is actually a negative thing, that it promotes more radical ideas and potentially more violence. So what do you say to that?
Well, that's a very good question, first of all. Secondly, this idea of going back to the source, especially the scripture, which has been influential in Christianity, is of course influential in Islam. It is not necessarily a bad thing. It can be a bad thing. I mean, it depends on why are you going back to the scripture, the source. If you have an intention, if you have an idea like that, the religion has become too dilute and too moderate and liberal, we should go back to toughen up. I mean, that's one approach. Then you can go there and find some texts to, justify some strong positions you have. That is the trend we see in the trend called Salafism in Islam. Maybe that term is, heard or unheard. It's a pop, Salafis, I would call them the ultra-Orthodox of Islam. Like if Sunni Islam is a major spectrum, Salafis are the most rigid, most hardcore wing in the Sunni Islamic spectrum. And they say the word Salaf comes from the first few pious generations of Islam. So they would go back to early generations and they would say we should dress like them. So they're known with a specific dress code. They would wear a turban or, wear short trousers, saying what Prophet Muhammad did. So they want to go back to basically to live in the 7th century and to reject whatever is modern. So that is not a good way of going back. However, other Muslims go back to the source to actually find values, a source of inspiration there to move forward to a more liberal, to a more modern interpretation of the faith. I consider myself from that perspective. Because when you go back to the Quran, you can find certain chapters that actually can be used for advancing a liberal worldview. There is no compulsion in religion, a very famous verse, declares in the Quran. And a lot of liberal-minded Muslims have gone there and said, well, the Quran says there should be no compulsion in religion, despite the fact that we have a lot of compulsion in Iran, Saudi Arabia, Sudan, the so-called Islamic states of today. Therefore, when people say, let's go back to the source, it's not necessarily a bad thing. But their presumptions and what they're looking for might be important.
So in like a lot of religious texts, you would argue that the Quran then is a bit of a prism. That is, you can look into it and find what you want to find?
Exactly. I mean, you can't find everything you want to find. But if you have a disposition towards, let's say, conflict, there are chapters in the Quran about wars between Prophet Muhammad and his early Muslim followers and the pagans of the time. So those verses define a war context, and Muslims are called to be steadfast in battle and fight for God. So if you're interested in any conflict in the world, and if you want something to amplify yourself in that conflict as good Muslims, you can go and quote those chapters. Whereas I would tell that, well, those chapters, not chapters, just a few passages actually in the Quran, I'll say those passages just tell us a historical incident. there was a war between Prophet Muhammad and his supporters and, you know, the pagans of Mecca. Because Muslims were attacked, they had to defend themselves. So this passage is telling us something that happened in history. Like many Christians or Jews would today see certain passages in the Old Testament, in the book of Joshua, for example. There are some passages about war. I would rather go back to Quran and focus on the verses that, to me, not describe a particular incident, but a broader principle of the faith. The truth is from your Lord. Let anyone who want to believe it, believe it. Let anyone who want to disbelieve it, disbelieve it. That is from the Quran. I just quoted a verse. So I would take that and say, well, this may be a universal principle rather than a conflict that happened in a particular incident, which is also in the Quran.
For people who, I guess, are concerned about what they see as creeping Islamism around the world, some most stridently describe or point to in the United States here, they point to Europe. And they say this is a problem, the way a lot of neighborhoods have grown up with a great deal of Muslims moving into specific areas, and they describe negative experiences and negative consequences that go along with that. What do you say to them?
No, I would grant that there is a social problem with some Muslim communities in Europe, but I would urge anyone who looks at this issue to see the social dynamics behind it and not just the imagined theological basis for it. Muslims in the U.S. and Europe are quite different, actually, because I've been to both speaking to European Muslims and American Muslims. And when I come to America, I see, when I speak to Muslim audiences in America, I hang out with Muslim friends here. I see people that are generally a part of America. They're proud to be American hyphenated with something like American Arab, Pakistani, Muslim, Turk. And they're middle class. Most of them are well educated. They are a part of mainstream life in the U.S. When you go to Europe, however, you see ghettoized communities because the society is not very open to integrate people from different cultures and values. Like you can see that in France, for example. In France, there's a big banlieue culture, you know, like just you would call suburb here, but not in a very positive sense. So there are like ghettoized communities, Muslim communities, North African, and they cannot be French because being French is very strictly defined. So it's not a hyphenated identity culture. So they feel outcasts. They feel some maybe racism against them. And also they began not as educated middle class people. They began as the sons of immigrants who were manual laborers and who didn't have the same socioeconomic status. So the problem of failing to integrate Muslim communities in Europe, and again, it would be wrong to generalize, there are very well integrated Muslims too, but there are problems. That has something to do with the economic situation there, with that culture, is whether it's open to religious freedom, is it diversity, and so on and so forth. Like, for example, French secularism is generally not very appreciated by most of the conservative Muslims. When you come to U.S., they don't have a problem with the separation of church and state here because it's not hostile to religion. It is rather respectful to religion.
In Europe, also, when people, often Muslims, emigrate from one country to another in Europe, they're restricted in terms of what they can do for work, if they can work at all within a year, sometimes longer, and that might have an impact on how well that they can integrate into a society.
Indeed, they're restricted. Also, some Muslims benefit from the welfare state, but in a bad way, in the sense that certain European countries, you know, give you just unemployment salary. And that doesn't encourage you to go work and, you know, have a job. That just encourages you to go there and just use that and, you know, make more kids and maybe, you know, take more money because of those. So there's a kind of a laziness culture, which is sometimes being created by the welfare system. Whereas I think America and Canada, too, I think, are good examples of integrating immigrants. Like, you respect their traditional identity, but you give them a new citizenship and you say you're American, but you can be proud of your heritage. But you have to work. You should get jobs. And you encourage for them. And I think that's a better model of integration. Therefore, all issues about Muslims, in other words, are not related to the doctrine or the theology of Islam. That certainly plays a role in many cases. But it is also important in what kind of a context they are, in what kind of a social setting and a political system and economic model they are.
We are now less than a month into the presidency of Donald Trump. He has executed a number of executive orders. The one that's most notable, really, is the travel ban on people who come from seven countries on Earth. How do you evaluate the impact that has on both just the perception of Muslims in the United States and the perception of the United States among Muslims?
I mean, I have respect to America's laws and regulations, but I personally felt a little bit offended by that so-called Muslim ban. Yes, it was not universally for Muslims. It was for seven nations, and I'm not from one of those nations. I'm from Turkey. But still, it raises a question, like, next time you go out of U.S. and come back, will there be a question? Maybe will your country be included in that list? So those questions came to people's mind. And so there was a little bit, you know, kind of worry that it brought to me, my wife, and my family. Moreover, I thought, well, what is the point? What's the reason, rationale behind this? I mean, if you are an ISIS commander that wants to organize a terrorist attack against the U.S., God forbid, you have a portfolio of passports that is from Belgium, UK, Russia, you know, like the terrorist groups we're talking about, ISIS, Al-Qaeda, are not coming from specific nations. You know, they have militants all over the world. So it's probably not going to stop any real threat, I think, to United States. And it's a 90-day valid ban. Nothing's going to change in 90 days in the situation of those countries. So let me be clear here. I understand Americans being concerned about terrorism. It's a concern for every country. My country, Turkey, has been hit by terrorists of ISIS or PKK, which is a total different, you know, Marxist-Leninist Kurdish separatist group. So we have the right to be worried about security. But the measures we bring in to secure our security should be really carefully evaluated and should be really to the point rather than putting a blank, brush, like a big brush to all the issues. Like, Turkey would be absolutely wrong if it brought a regulation about Kurds, all Kurdish citizens, worrying about the PKK, which is a group that speaks out of Kurdish nationalism. So in that sense, I was not very happy with that particular ban, and I'm glad to see that rule of law has been effective and judges have been able to stop that ban, saying that it violates constitutional rights. And that was interesting for me as a political experience as well, because in other countries in the world, in many other countries, you can't imagine the president giving an executive order and a judge having the power to stop that. I mean, in Turkey, probably you can't imagine that right now. That judge itself would be in trouble if he or she tried to do something like that. That showed to me what checks and balances are, why they are important, and why protecting rule of law, sometimes from executives that are a little bit pushing on rule of law, is important.
How does Islam as a faith tradition, how well does that mesh with sort of the American ideal, classical liberalism, the government leaves you alone? People describe Islam as totalitarian quite often. But what do you have to say about the meshing of the traditions of classical liberalism and Islam?
There are certain conflicts, I'll be honest, because traditional mainstream Sunni Islamic doctrine defines a state that is defined by Islam. So here's a state, a caliphate, an Islamic, state, which has laws that are derived from Islamic law. So that's the ideal. That's the ideal for if you look into the classical teachings. And are there Muslims who want to, put those classical teachings into life? Yes, in the Muslim world, we call them the Islamists. They want to carry out Islam today as a political ideology. So there are Muslims who think like that. But also there are many Muslims, and I think they're the majority in maybe the majority of Muslim countries. They think, well, you know, life goes on. You know, we live in a different era. You know, societies are different. Now we live in secular states, and that's fine. As far as I can do my prayers, do my fasting in the holy month of Ramadan, and if I can go to mosque, and you know, I out of my own conviction refrain from eating pork or you know, drinking alcohol. I'm a good Muslim, so I don't need the state to be defined in the same faith. And in the Islamic world, you can see these tendencies. Some will say, I just want to live as a good Muslim, and I just want a state that gives me that guarantee and security. They're very fine with that. I see many Muslims like that. Many Muslims living in the United States, I think like that. Whereas some will say, no, we have a utopia, a political utopia. Our religion demands that. So they would want to have Islamic regimes or states. Here, I think it would be wrong to deny that there's a political vision based on Islam, an authoritarian political vision, I should say, from our modern standards. And I think that's a problem, and I'm a critic of that approach, which is mainstream in Saudi Arabia. You know, most Saudis think that's how a government should be. But when you come to Turkey, for example, you see many conservative Muslims in Turkey fine with a secular state if it allows their practices. If you go to Bosnia, another Muslim majority country, secularism is accepted as the default position, and there are really any big arguments against that. And in the West, I think many Western Muslims, they appreciate the values, the freedom they find in a country like America, rather than trying to bring Sharia, you know, to be imposed in America.
Mustafa Akyol is author of Islam Without Extremes and most recently The Islamic Jesus. Subscribe to and rate this podcast at iTunes and Google Play, and follow us on Twitter at Cato Podcast.